on this episode of Autographs.
But in terms of kind of crazy and really difficult experiments, I decided a while ago I was going to disprove the Taoist equation that says that guys shouldn't ejaculate as often as we do. And I've been, since the beginning of my blog, I'm like, guys, porn's bad for you. Sex is good for you. Ejaculating all the time probably isn't. And the reason for that is I spent a year experimenting with that and going for, 30 days at a time without ejaculating while married, while having an active sex life, right? And I published all the data and the Taoists were right. Like, there's an orgasm hangover for men. You're just a little bit crankier than next day afterwards, and the doubts will tell you it's depleting.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Singh, and you are now listening to Autographs. You know, when you stop looking for acceptance and you just enjoy your life, the whole game changes.
You have to understand yourself, and I think the real answer is real giving, is that I don't understand why people don't get that if you give purely, you get.
We get good at what we do the most of. You nurture the process of going to yourself and listening to yourself, and you get very good at honing your own intuition.
Did I actually make people stop and go, whoa, humans are capable of more than I thought? You're great at a certain skill, and you can then put that skill to use to help somebody else. That's fulfillment.
My hope is that this show inspires you to just feel like you can just be yourself, have fun, and enjoy your life too. So enjoy and take care out there.
Hey, Nick.
What's up, Dave?
How are you?
Amazing, man. How are you?
Doing really well.
Good stuff.
That camera set up for you. That looks all right.
Yeah, it looks great. You have the coolest studio, man. Whenever I see you in interviews or on your Instagram and stuff like that. By the way, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you sound great. I can put you on a headphone if you want. With this system, I get no feedback. So
No. You're good. I record internally through Zoom, so I'm not recording externally on local audio. So I'm good.
Awesome.
How you been, man? How's your day been?
I dropped my kids off at school this morning, and actually just had already one good interview before this. It's book launch week, so it's cool. I'm feeling great.
So everybody, we have on Dave Asprey today, Fastest Way. I appreciate you and your team sending me a copy of the book. I loved it. I'm into health, man. I've been working out since I was this big. I was lucky. My pops was really athletic growing up, so he'd take me to the gym, and I've been intermittent fasting for many years. But before we start there, just good to see you. Actually, my first interaction with you was at a Tony Robbins event. You were speaking there years ago.
That was fun. Yeah.
Do you remember that or?
I certainly remember speaking at Tony Robbins, but there's 15,000 people sort of come in at you all at once, once you're on stage. So it's a pretty intense time.
Yeah. Have you ever spoken to that many people outside of Tony Robbins? Is that the most people you've addressed live?
I think that's the largest live audience in a stadium versus, I'm doing a fasting training that'll have probably 20 or 30,000 people in a couple of weeks, but that's virtual. But I did a couple events for Tony. I don't know which one was the largest. I did the New York and the LA one, and then some remote stuff in Australia. But it's pretty awesome to just step out there on the stage and look up at this whole stadium full of people. You got to imagine that's how, Kanye West feels at a concert or something. Tony's awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. Speaking of Kanye West, are you a Kanye West fan? Aside politics aside, what kind of music do you listen to? I've been watching some interviews with you. I don't think anybody's ever asked you what kind of music you listen to. I'd love to know.
It's really weird. Things like Spotify and before that Pandora and all, the algorithms just find what you like, right? And music used to be a community experience. And you listen to music with your friends. And now it's becoming more and more a personal experience. And I find there's all kinds of bands. I don't even know. I've never heard of them before, but it's like, that's the best damn song, right? Hold
on. Tell me one of the bands. I have Spotify up right now. I'm just going to search it so I can listen to it later.
I've got my Spotify up right now.
I want to get into Dave Asprey mode.
This is a weird one. There's this band called Insular, Insanlar. Insan, like insane without the E, and then LAR. And they have this song called Demodem, and it's some kind of weird like EDM plus a little bit of a Middle Eastern beat. I don't know. I like a lot of North African meets something European, but it's just got to have the right, you know, the right stuff in it. And I'll go from that to, in fact, there's an article in the New York Times a while back about Rick Rubin's like top 25 songs that he's done. And I'm like, 20 of those 25 are favorite songs. So it seems like anything that Rick Rubin has touched is going to be an awesome song, whether it's Rage Against the Machine.
Give me an example of a Rick Rubin you love.
Well, Rage Against the Machine, Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, Madonna. Oh, and Kanye cut his last album with Rick Rubin too.
Yeah, so which is random and hilarious, which is freaking awesome. Have you ever heard of Jerry Weintraub? If you like Bob Dylan, you might like Jerry Weintraub.
I have heard of Jerry Weintraub. I'm going to type his name in here on Spotify.
Yeah. Oh, no. He's not an artist. He managed
manager?
Sinatra, Elvis, and Bob Dylan. He was like, and then he also produced the Ocean movies. And he has this book called When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'm Dead.
Okay. That's where I know the name. And do you know Shep Gordon as well?
No, who's that?
Oh my God, Shep Gordon. This guy was the manager for probably 50 of the largest names in music ever. Janis Joplin and all this. I had him on my show a while back. And the stories from that are amazing. And he does a Christmas thing at his house in Hawaii, a charity fundraiser. And I got to go 1 year where, you know, Aerosmith and it was like huge names. Jamming. There's like 200 people at a party and half of them are like, I can't believe who that is.
Well, when you're in rooms like that, how do you, okay. So maybe this would be a good place to start. Actually, by the way, I ask all my guests what they're grateful for and why at the top of the conversation. So what's something you're grateful for and why? And you're very conscious and stuff. So you'll probably give me a unique answer, but let's X-nay the answers that are too obvious. I would love to hear something unique.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more, but yes, what does it feel like to be in a room like that? Dude, it's profound gratitude. It was funny that you jumped to it almost like you read my mind there, because I'm sitting there at this, you know, this party, and I'm like just hearing these musicians who have played for hundreds of millions of people, right? But they're just jamming with each other for fun, right? And you just you can feel like the energetic power. Like these are people who have like moved society. Music does that. And to be able to just sit there and just to be a witness to that, like that's what I was saying. I was just like awe and gratitude in combination, just going, wow, this is like the most amazing thing ever. And another part of that is early on in Bulletproof, I had this dinner. It was like with 20 people that wanted to ask me some questions about biohacking in San Francisco. And this guy sitting next to me is just like peppering me with all these detailed questions. Like, well, what kind of butter do you put in your coffee? And like all these details. I'm like, he clearly like followed me. And I go, so what do you do? He's like, I'm in a band. Then I go, what's your band? He's like, Third Eye Blind. And I'm like, that's a dumb name for a band. No one's ever going to follow you. No, I didn't say that. But it was Stephen Jenkins, right? And I'm like, you've heard of Bulletproof? And he goes, are you kidding? Like the whole band's on it. You should come hang with us on our tour bus and make it backstage. And Nick, I was in Portland with him. And he goes, hey, let's cook something before the concert opens. And we filmed a little thing where we're cooking salmon on a little grill right in where the mosh pit would be in a concert, right? And I'm like, Steven, this is taking a while to cook. Your concert started a half hour ago. And he goes, I'm the rock star. They'll wait. And like, we finished our salmon and like this happened. And then I talked to the band and Roger Waters, like Pink Floyd, they had me backstage in Vancouver. And to understand that any artist has ever had a cup of my coffee before going on stage, much less they do it all the time, man, like that blows me away. And when Rick in the New York Times, Rick Rubin, he said, oh, I drink Bulletproof coffee for breakfast. I'm like, did that really just happen? Like, holy crap. And I got to know Rick. He's been on my show and we recorded the podcast at Shangri-La Studios. We're like some of the most impactful music. Just to know that anything you've ever created just played a tiny drop of like fueling that kind of creativity. like when I step back, it's that same awe and gratitude thing. Like how could that even be? it's really cool.
Dude, that's so beautiful, man. Like, like, by the way, I'll throw my whole show to shit every single day of the week for just good stories. And like, I just love storytelling. It's the funnest thing ever. So you answer the gratitude question. Hands down, I have a list of cool questions, but I'm not even concerned with that, man. I was just like, that's the coolest thing in the world. I wanted to acknowledge you. I had it on my paper here to acknowledge you, man, and just say, I've been intermittent fasting for a few years and it's changed my life. It's changed my diet.
Nice.
I don't do it as strictly as a lot of people do, but your book
don't have
gave me permission to like show love to myself with that. But man, I just wanted to say thank you, man, on behalf of humanity. You introduced something so fundamentally cool to humankind, which is bulletproof coffee. And like, that's like, I'm not kidding, dude. Like, who, like, I remember when I first heard of butter and coffee, I was like, what? It's the strangest thing, but it's just like, think about how many people drink those cups, man. So just kudos to you and your spirit and your soul, man. You've done some incredible things while you're here. And it's changed my life and it's touched so many else's, and it's made people give a fuck about their health, which is a really difficult thing to do. I feel like health and finances are two things that are hard to care about, but once you get into them and you start involving yourself in the world, it's easy to do it, but getting yourself there is tough. That being said, I would love to just spend the next, if you're open to it, and if you don't have anything off the top, I have a list of questions as a backup too, to just chop it up on stories. Like, you have the coolest life to me, man. You have this in. What I've noticed about folks is that when they develop their thing, and your thing has largely been bulletproof, that's what has kind of elevated you to being around some really incredible folks, and rightfully so. You deserve every minute of it. And in that process, you must have the coolest stories. And folks who have developed something like you, they develop these cool stories. I'd love to just hear about them. And I'll preframe it with this. You're also a wild dude, man. Like, you can be a trippy human being. Like, I was reading your book. I was like, he did that for a year? He went raw vegan for that long? Like, the amount of uncertainty that you have to tame with in those situations is wild, man. So I feel like if we could get a good story or two out of you, I would have a ton of fun. But I don't know if you have any off the top, any cool people you've hung with, any cool diets you've been on them with, any cool fasts you've been with.
It's kind of cool to, you know, to be able to name drop and all that. And what you find is that when you've done something that is that's noteworthy or that has value, you'll get people who are in a position where they have a substantial amount of money or influence. They're like, I could read the book. Maybe I did read the book, but I'm in the unique position where I'm just going to call up the author and ask him the questions. So, I mean, I've had sometimes just the crazy things where I stop and I'm like, is this really my life? I was outside the Bulletproof Cafe in Santa Monica once.
I love that cafe. Mm-hmm. I've met the coolest people in the world at your cafe, just as a side note.
Oh, thank you, man. So you know what I'm talking about. So I'm out there and, you know, sometimes you see pretty amazing celebrities coming in on that stuff. But I'm just outside and I like to go there to eat, but usually I end up like signing books and just talking with people because they recognize me. And so I'm like, okay. I was walking outside and this couple walks up and go, oh, Dave, you know, we're big fans. And the guy says, you know, my name is, I just blanked on his name. I want to say Richard, but that isn't sounding right.
Let's let it come to you. Let's
Mario. Anyway.
We'll call him Richard.
I know it's wrong. I think it was Mario. Anyway, he says, I'm all right. And then the reason that I'm having a hard time remembering, he goes, oh, and I'd like to introduce you to my wife, Alanis Morissette. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, we just drove across town to get, you know, the food here. And I'm like, isn't it ironic?
What?
I didn't say that, but wouldn't that not have been the best thing ever to say, given her famous song?
Yeah,
just like walking down the street, and the fact that any of these like major celebrities recognize me. Okay, I was a fat computer hacker. Like, I weighed 300 pounds. Like, no one's ever gonna know anything about me. And to have stuff like that happen, I never like it. It's just it's pretty stunning, and it's one of those things. Just to know that people are doing great work in the world, that they're somehow using something that I've been able to create. I'm just always that always triggers gratitude, and I think about it though. It's cool to be like, oh, this is a great celebrity. But the thing that probably was most impactful is I was in Austin maybe 6-7 years ago. Bulletproof Diet had just come out. And this guy comes up to me with his wife and he goes, "Hey, Dave, I got something for you." And he gives me like 2 grass-fed steaks, like frozen from his favorite farm. And there's a card. And in the card, it's signed by his whole family. And there's a before and after picture from 3 months apart. And it's this like notes from every one of his family members, his teenage kids. And there's like, "Dave, you need to know how much this changed our life." And his daughter was 16 and she was obese and she had, you know, red face and pimples. I'm like, I know, because I was like that when I was 16. And then you get the next photo and she's perfectly healthy, normal skin, normal body weight in just a few months of just understanding what not to eat and what to eat. And to understand the difference in a teenager's life for decades and decades and decades, we're like, "Oh, I got my brain back. I got my hormones back. I'm now in control of my body. I can show up the way I want to do. My brain's going to form the way it is." That actually matters way more to me than, you know, meeting the coolest celebrities on earth. And then to take that and look at, you know, the 500,000 copies of the book and, you know, to be able to go to Japan where I haven't done any marketing and people bought 180,000 copies of the Bulletproof Diet there. And I went there to say thanks. And I don't know if you've ever been to Japan, but no, it's a relatively conservative culture. So I go there to do a little book signing and men and women are walking up and they're lifting up their shirts. Okay. And I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "Why?" Like, "Look, I grew abs. Right. And just to understand the global nature of this idea that maybe you should stop eating the stuff that makes you weak. But just to understand, and then, you know, to go to Latin America and you see the same thing. So to realize a global movement around biohacking is something that I started, but that is way bigger than me. You know, I lit the fire, but it's taken off. So it's the personal changes, just knowing that it affects kids and people have been struggling with their brains the way I used to. And that I went off my ADD meds. You know, I've lost tons of weight. I don't think I need a new hip anymore because like my inflammation is gone, stuff like that, man. It can be overwhelming, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I could only imagine. And like, I dream of finding a way to strike people's hearts like that, man. It's such beautiful sentiment. I care deeply about the same things as you. It wakes everything up inside of me when you say that, man. That's beautiful. What would you say? And I agree, like the celebrity stuff, it's cool. It kind of just wakes you up and goes, "Wow, I'm really living this. This is neat." But it's those moments that really get you. What was the hardest journey? This might be too broad of a question, but this is just coming to me. What was the hardest journey you ever traversed? Like hardest experiment you've ever conducted might be the best way to put that, or experience you've ever endured. And I'll give you some examples. Like I know in the book you discuss the woman's cave experience. So that fast doesn't have to be a fast, but just what was something brutally difficult? Tell me about that time.
Fasting in a cave for 4 days when I've recognized I'm afraid of being alone, I'm afraid of being hungry, and I've got no food and no people. It was a big deal at the time. It was really profound. And it would definitely be somewhere on that list. But in terms of kind of crazy and really difficult experiments, I decided a while ago I was going to disprove the Taoist equation that says that guys shouldn't ejaculate as often as we do. And I've been, you know, since the beginning of my blog, I'm like, "Guys, porn's bad for you. Sex is good for you. Ejaculating all the time probably isn't." And the reason for that is I spent a year experimenting with that and going for, you know, 30 days at a time without ejaculating while married, while having an active sex life, right? And I published all the data and the Taoists were right. Like there's an orgasm hangover for men. You're just a little bit crankier the next day afterwards. And the Taoists will tell you it's depleting. And if you look at Napoleon Hill and guys like that, there's a long history of something called sublimation. And you can take the energy of creation, which is around sex, and you can channel it into creating things other than children. And you can channel it to creating companies and creating movements or creating books or just, you know, creating a better life for you and your community. And that's hard to talk about, Seven. It's hard to... You know, it's hard to convince people. You're like, "Oh, not only should you not eat every now and then, you know, maybe And he's just not finished in bed tonight. And they're like, Dave, fuck you. I'm like, no, really, it works. I'm serious. But to do that experiment for a year of you know, getting the data every day, like, hey, how happy am I? And then there's times when you're like, man, if I don't, you know, if I don't have sex right now, I seriously feel like I'm going to die. And then you're like, no, but I don't want to spoil the experiment. Like, I'm going to stick with this. I'm grateful I have a supporting wife. Yes. So that was really hard to do. Man.
So I have an automatic experience in this, not as much as you, but I'd love to know how you tracked it, because I did a recent challenge with my buddy, you know, Andy Frischilla's, and by the way, you're going to end up on like an episode of Family Guy or something like that, man. We're like, all right. Like, they're just going to write your ass in, man. They're just going to be like, oh yeah. Like Peter Griffin's going to be like, oh yeah, I'm fasting. And then you're going to come out of nowhere and be like, don't ejaculate for a month. He's going to be like, fuck you, Dave Asprey.
That would be awesome. By the way, South Park did a huge butter episode when Bulletproof Coffee created like a global shortage of grass-fed butter. It was amazing.
Bulletproof Coffee created a global shortage of grass-fed
butter? Yeah. Sometime around 2014, 2015, there was a huge shortage of grass-fed butter everywhere because everyone's buying it to put in their coffee. And that in combination with some weather events where like some grass wasn't available and all of a sudden like you couldn't get it. And that's someone hilarious. Got arrested smuggling butter into Norway. It was funny.
Holy crap. You're just like, hands off, guys. I did not tell you to fucking go smuggle butter. It's hilarious. But anyways, do you know, you might've heard of Andy Frischilla, but he started this challenge called 75 Hard. I'm sure you've heard of it. Do you know 75 Hard or no?
No, I've heard of Andy, but I don't know 75 Hard.
Cool. Yeah. It's going viral. It's like, it's just like the 75 day challenge where you drink a gallon of water each day. You do 245.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it. Right. So anyway, I like to consider I'm in solid shape. So I did a revised version of it. I know I didn't need to be working out twice a day and I already drank a ton of water. So I did it with a buddy of mine. And one of the challenges were no masturbation. So that was one of the challenges.
Yep.
And I told him, I said, dude, I've never done anything like this. So I'll promise you to go a month. And I don't know where I'm going to get after a month, but I'll promise a month. So I did 28 days. I did 4 weeks. And it was like nothing else I've ever experienced.
It's crazy, right?
It was really difficult. So I have a few questions for you because I felt that life energy coursing through me. And he did too. After week two, we both owned businesses. We were on the phone just almost yelling at each other in good fashion. We were like, dude, I feel so much energy. But here's a couple questions and I'll let you kind of go with it. One is for the no ejaculation. I just want to rephrase this and apologies if I'm getting too personal, but did you do no finishing at all, even when you're in bed with your wife for the month?
Here's what I did.
Okay.
The equation for living forever from the Taoists, and that's what Taoism is about, is they wanted immortality and enlightenment, but immortality is a big thing first. So age in years minus 7 divided by 4. A number.
Say that again.
Age in years minus 7. So how old are you?
I'm 25.
25. So 25 minus 7 is 18 divided by 4.
Here, I'll do the math right now.
So 18 divided by 4 is around 5, 3.5. So what they would say at your age.
4.5.
There you go. So at your age, you should not ejaculate more often than every 4.5 days. And that's to maintain your health. And that if you want to live forever, don't ejaculate more than once a month and keep your orgasm to less than 2 hours. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. You okay? Get some water.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. Drink some water though.
Cool.
The joys of talking nonstop for 5 days.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, you got to be fucking chugging.
Well, it's book launch week, so I've like doing a lot of shows and getting people to know about fasting and all. Yeah. So what I did is I said, all right, I'm going to test this out with the 8-day thing. And then I'm going to try the 30-day thing. And so you're still having sex, right? You're just like, I'm not going to ejaculate.
Understand.
And what happens there is, strangely enough, you have a lot more sex, right? Because you're like, I'm ready to go again.
Yeah.
Right. And the side effect in a relationship like that is, well, it creates a lot more oxytocin, right? And also you're like, okay, I know that it's not really about me getting off here. So you become actually a better lover because you're like, what else am I going to do? I'm like,
exactly. I might as well help you out.
Yeah. So I did that. So it was like tracking frequency of sex, but then I did one of the 30 day times where it's like, I'm just like no stimulation whatsoever.
Understood.
Right. And that's not to say that I'm not going to still, you know, help my wife along, but I'm just like, we're just not going to,
You're a good husband.
Yeah, no stimulation there. That was really, really difficult, right? But so I tested all the cases. The difficulty in that for a year or two, like, I'm going to go 30 days. Oh, day 24, oops, you know, like what do you, I published the graphs. So I'm like, okay, sorry, didn't manage to do it that time.
Yeah.
But what's going on there is a form of fasting. And I actually write about that a little bit in Fast This Way.
You do.
Because there's this thing that happens in our bodies. It's part of the operating system for life. And it's, if anything is going to stay alive, the first thing you do, if something's scary, you have to run away from it, kill it, or hide it. So you get aggressive, you get avoidant, things like that. And if there's nothing that your body thinks is a threat, including like criticism or whatever else, all sorts of things that feel like a threat that aren't, then you got to eat everything to make sure that there isn't a famine. And if you don't eat everything, or if you just skip one meal, the body's like, you're going to die. And the reality is you have 2 months before you're going to die, probably three, right? But it feels like you're going to die. And then the third F word is, you know, reproduction related, fertility, fornication, or the other big F word.
Just a quick pause for anybody listening. The four Fs are something Dave references in his book. To be clear, they're fear, let me see if I get them right. Fear, fertility, fuck.
In order, it's fear, food, fertility, or fucking,
yeah,
and then friend.
Yes,
and all life goes through things in those orders. So if you're afraid, you're not a very good friend. And if you're afraid, you're not hungry. When you get past fear, eat everything, right? And if you don't eat everything, you feel like you're going to die, like because you could die. The species has died of famine before, at least many members of our species. And then you got to have sex, because otherwise there won't be another generation and the species will die. Yeah. And that's why when you're laying in bed, you're like, tonight I'm not going to ejaculate. And then right before you ejaculate, you convince yourself it's a really good idea to ejaculate right now. Right.
Yeah.
So we're every wired time. To do that. We don't choose any of this. It's in our bone marrow. It's in our cells.
Interesting. Right?
And then it's also in ourselves to be nice and supportive and, you know, take care of our young, take care of our elders, and support our community. And we're wired to that. But you don't do that when you're hungry and there's no love in your life. So there's an order of operations for all this. Fasting is about going without. And that's why I wrote this book. Writing a book about fasting from food, I would never just do that, because look, step one, don't eat for a while. Step two, it's good for you. Here's some studies. And there's your book on fasting. There's plenty of those. This is in that book. This is how do you actually do it? Because as soon as you say, I'm going to fast, you pick up the donut and you eat it and you break your fast and you feel like a failure, or you make it through the fast and you're so tired, you hate it, and you don't do it again tomorrow. So the you know, 10 years and hundreds of thousands of people in the Bulletproof community have been doing intermittent fasting for a while. So there's lessons to be learned, but it's the same mindset. You tell the body, you're not going to die if you don't ejaculate. You're not going to die if you skip a meal. You're not going to die if you do the thing you're afraid of, like public speaking or whatever it is. And it's teaching yourself that you're not going to die when your body is afraid you're going to die. And that creates masses of resilience and masses of personal power. So I think for all guys, you should learn to have sex and not ejaculate, and to do it for a week or two. And you should learn to not masturbate for a month or two. And when you do this, it's about power over your biology. It's about self-control, and it's about energy, because all of those four forces other than friend, they suck energy from your life. And when you realize, how much of my essence am I putting into worrying about things that aren't a threat? Am I putting into thinking about tacos? And am I putting into thinking about the nearest naked person, right? That energy could go to something better. And if you realize you own the energy, and these are necessary things for humans, but they're not as necessary as you feel they are, all the extra worry, it turns into energy to make the best song in the world, to do something that matters. And that's why fasting is important. It's how do I feel safe going without things that I don't need right now?
Yeah, you answer that question perfectly, Dave. Perfectly. So thank you for being so thorough. One of my biggest takeaways from the book, and I want to be mindful of your time. It's almost at the top of the half hour here. Do you have a hard out at the half hour? It's okay if you do, because I know you're going back to back today.
Yeah, we can do about 4 or 5 more minutes. Sure. I've got my senior team on, but they'll hang for a couple minutes. They'll get started without me.
Sure. Cool. Thank you. So I'll say this. The whole purpose of the book, for anybody listening to pick it up, it really is about going without. And the reason I love your book so much is actually not because it gives you great advice about fasting, which it does. It's that we're living in a culture right now where we're being tested, especially with the pandemic, on our resilience as human beings. And oddly enough, the cure-all could be, esoterically speaking, self-love or self-worth, if you want to frame it that way. And I've learned on the firsthand basis that one of the fastest ways to attain and the best ways to attain self-worth and self-love and self-acceptance is actually not by having more, it's by having less. And fasting is synonymous with having less. It's synonymous to going without. It's synonymous to doing hard things. It's synonymous to putting yourself on the chopping block and then committing to something. So
there's a nuance in there, Nick, that I think you've got to pick up here.
Yeah.
Fasting isn't about having less.
Okay.
It's about waiting. Right. There's a big difference. Yeah. So when you're doing an intermittent fast, you have the same amount of food that you would have had anyway. You have it later in the day. Right. So what it feels like, it's about having less. And there's a path of spiritual development. And I've traveled in Tibet and Nepal and in the Andes, like studying with the masters. There's something called asceticism. And these are the guys with a beggar bowl. I have only this bowl. And if people don't put food in it, I can't eat, kind of a thing. That's having less. And it is one of the paths. But even Gandhi said, no, we don't have to do that. Like, it's possible to have and to do it. It's the having and the feeling like you need. That's the problem. And fasting is about understanding that most of the things you tell yourself you need are actually desires, and that it's okay to wait. And when you teach yourself to wait, you don't have to go without. You just learned patience.
Thank you for clearing that up. You are undoubtedly correct. I actually remember that in your book, The Difference Between Fasting and Calories In, Calories Out. It was your relationship with food is much healthier instead of you just restricting yourself. So that said, to wrap up, I'll ask two more things and then we'll jump off and they're relatively quick. One is just so we can wrap up this conversation about ejaculation, we don't leave anybody hanging. This means no finishing after sex and also no masturbation for a duration of time for men. And I believe you wrote in your book, correct me if I'm wrong, that this does not apply to women. They can climax as frequently as they'd like.
It does not apply to women. And it's really important. Even the ancient writings about this, they say, depending on the translation, a woman walks away undiminished. And having orgasms for women does very different physiological things that are generally good. Emotional intelligence goes up, happiness goes up. And I interviewed John Gray. The women are
men are from Mars.
He's a dear friend, and there's all sorts of stuff he wouldn't say about sex until very recently. So the last interview I did on Bulletproof Radio with him was really profound. He's like, I've have all these practices, but my wife didn't want me to talk about them, and now I'm free to talk about some of the stuff. So he talks about the 9 levels of orgasm for women. And I'm doing a whole series on sex coming up for February on Bulletproof Radio, but it's very different for men and women. And the bottom line is, if you're a guy who's in control of your ejaculation, you actually can masturbate if you really want to. You just don't ejaculate, and you can have sex all you want. You just say, I'm going to choose whether or not I ejaculate. You can even have an orgasm without ejaculating once you have a practice of doing this. But what you end up doing is you become a much better lover because you have better self-control and you don't fall for that story where your body's like, you're going to ejaculate now or the end of the world will come. And so when it becomes a choice, like, okay, what can I do to bring more pleasure to my partner? And it definitely makes sex a lot more fun. And instead of being goal oriented, like, you know, I'm going to get off or even I'm going to get her off. It's more like, you know, how are we going to have fun together? Right. Yeah. And so it shifts a lot. And when you're doing the Taoism thing for guys, they're not saying don't masturbate at all. They're just saying don't ejaculate because they're different things.
Yeah, very. You can like edge. And so anybody listening to this, I have tried this for 28 days, 4 weeks, and it was an outstanding 4 weeks. So I would highly encourage you to. Dave, last question to wrap up, and feel free to answer it quite tightly and shortly given the time. What is the simplest thing people can walk away from tangibly here to just a guiding principle, guiding ways to think about their health and their life? And it is a loaded question. You could answer it in-depthly, but I would love for just people to walk away with some just basics and they could just consider as they go to eat, as they go to live their lives.
Every time the voice in your head tells you that you need something, whether you need to be with people right now, whether you need to eat, whether you need to have sex, whether you need to not do that scary thing, need means you'll die if you don't do it. And there are very few things you need to do. You need to breathe, but less than you think you need to. And I talk about fasting from air for brief periods to get stronger in the book. in right now during the pandemic, right? There's this looming fear that's not measurable, right? And it's all out there, and it's leading to loneliness, and we need to be around other people as part of our tribe. Except we don't really need it. We want it and we're better with it. Solitude has great value, right? And so it's that believing that you need what you want is one of the major things that makes people unkind to each other, and it makes us weak. And understanding that the need word is something you should almost never use, because when you do, you're telling your tissues and you're believing your own story, which need means I'll die if I don't get it. It's a lot of wanting, and wanting makes you less happy. And when you realize, okay, I'd like to have it, but I'm okay and I'm safe if I don't have it, and creating a sense of safety no matter what's happening in the world around you is one of the biggest things you can do right now. And the truth of the matter is that whether you get the virus or whether you get a vaccine, you're probably safe on either side of that. There is risk. There was always risk. But I just look at the raw numbers. You're relatively safe, maybe less so than before, but you're still relatively safe on all the paths. And it's that I have a sense of safety and something might go wrong. And you always had that. You could get in a car accident driving to go to the doctor's office, right? So you're never completely safe, but you're always safer than you feel. And it's tapping into the feeling of safety and groundedness that'll get you through almost anything. And it unleashes a lot of power. And the way you tap into that is by showing yourself, I don't need breakfast today. Right? You can do that. I don't need this thing that I thought I needed. And then you start playing with, my body told me I needed it. My mind knows better. And then it's the conversation between those two that really sets you free.
That's an amazing answer, Dave. You got a beautiful soul, man. You got a really beautiful soul, and you're very in touch with things that I think are going to be revolutionary. People will look back at your work, and I think that we'll all be much better off. We already are for it. Thanks for being on. Final autographs question that I like to ask: how would you describe yourself in one word?
I'd probably say peaceful.
Beautiful, man. I feel that. And when you folks read the book, the very last chapter of the book, don't skip to it because you need to read the book to get it, defines that perfectly. Dave, thanks for being on, man. I appreciate you, brother. Everybody have a look at Fastest Way. You can get it on Audible, you get it on Amazon, you get it anywhere you get books. It is an outstanding book. I think that it'll change your life for the better. It is certainly not just about food. If you struggle with resiliency, I think this is going to help you. So
thanks, Nick. I got one other thing for people who listen to this. I've never taught one of my books. I was a teacher at the University of California for 5 years. I'm teaching this one for free over 2 weeks. Go to fastestway.com, sign up, 20,000+ people fasting together, learning how to do it, including a spiritual fast for 1 or 2 days at the end of it. Fastestway.com is a gift. Just I want people to have this knowledge because I think we're all going to be nicer to each other when we've got a little bit more control.
Unbelievable. I did not know that. Thank you. Head to fastestway.com. I'll put it in the description as well, and I'll coordinate with your team on any special links also.
Thanks, man.
Dave, man, thank you so much. I know that we went over time. Appreciate every minute of your time, brother.
You got it, Nick. Have an awesome day.
Hopefully run into you in Santa Monica sometime soon.
Looking forward to it.
Take care. Bye.
Take care.